The Compliance Perspectives podcast is sponsored by Onspring, a no-code GRC software for compliance pros like you. Visit onspring.com to learn more. Welcome to the Compliance Perspectives podcast. I'm Adam Turteltaub from the Society of Corporate Compliance and Ethics and Healthcare Compliance Association. Joining us today from Washington, D.C. is Brian Stimson. Brian is a partner at Arnold Golden Gregory. And today we're going to be talking about a session that he's doing at the 2024 Compliance Institute. The session is the All Surprises Act, Avoiding Compliance Pitfalls and Responding to Administrative Enforcement Actions Under the Surprise Billing Laws. Brian, thanks for taking the time to talk to us today. Thanks for doing this session. First, can you give everyone an overview of what the No Surprises Law says?
Sure, Adam. It's a pleasure to be with you and the audience today. The No Surprises Act does a few things. First, it outlaws balance billing, meaning sending a bill to a patient for an amount in excess of their in-network cost sharing. And then it sets up a procedure by which the appropriate out-of-network payment rate is determined and paid by the plan to the provider. Those are the two major things that it does.
So what are some of the more typical situations where surprises have tended to occur and caused a lot of anxiety and pain for people?
There are three, and they're the core focus of the law. The first is emergency services. The second is in-network physician services, or rather out-of-network physician services provided at in-network hospitals, and then air ambulance services. So taking the first example, the balance billing would arise if I went to the emergency department and was not conscious and underwent surgery, and then after the surgery came to find out that the emergency department was out of network with my insurer, and then I received a bill in excess of what I would have paid if I was in network. Really, the difference between what I would have paid in network and bill charges.
And then what were the other two, which was ambulance care, and then also, what is it, out of network in hospitals?
Yeah, so the second example would be a situation where a patient presents to a hospital for a surgery or a procedure. The hospital is in network, so the patient's done their homework and checked to see if their insurance will cover what they receive at the facility. And then one of the other providers in the chain of care, like a radiologist or an anesthesiologist or a laboratory services provider, is unbeknownst to the patient out of network. And then the patient gets a balance bill from that particular provider for the surgery. That's the second scenario the law seeks to address. And then the third scenario is air ambulance transport. Typically, air ambulances are dispatched to roadside accident scenes or other places where a ground ambulance can't transport the patient quickly enough or can't access. It's a lot like an emergency services scenario. The patient may not know whether the air ambulance is in network or out of network. And ultimately, because it's an emergency service, the focus is just getting the patient to the emergency department. And it's only after the patient arrives at the emergency department that the cost of the service is ultimately sorted out. And in some instances, patients have raised concerns about the charges that they discover after they've received the service.
And I know those can be very, very high for air ambulances. So what does the enforcement landscape look like? Are there patterns evolving?
Yeah, there's a two-tiered enforcement structure under the Act. Part of the enforcement structure is federal and part of it is state, and that's by design. The Act applies to and amends the Public Health Service Act, ERISA, and the tax code. The Public Health Service Act regulates insurance plans, and the primary regulators under the PHSA are the states. It's only if the states fail to regulate that the federal government steps in. The federal government is the primary regulator under ERISA through the Department of Labor, and is the primary regulator under the Internal Revenue Code through the Department of the Treasury or the IRS, its sub-agency. So the states are enforcing the balance billing prohibition and some of the other features of the act, some of the other consumer protections, like the good faith estimate requirement. And then CMS is doing some of the same. And then DOL and the IRS are enforcing under ERISA and the Internal Revenue Code. What I have seen most is CMS enforcement in my own practice. I've seen enforcement of the balance billing prohibition, enforcement related to good faith estimates for patients who are self-pay. And I've seen less state enforcement. In some of the state enforcement that I've seen has been by state attorneys general who have used consumer protection statutes to get into the game, even if they don't enforce the NSA. So it's a federal state structure, and I think the level of enforcement will continue to tick up as we get deeper and deeper into implementation.
And you know, this is all still fairly new, so it'll be interesting to see how things pan out. Now, sir, for a compliance officer trying to address this risk, where should they start?
I recommend that compliance officers start with the balance billing prohibition. It's a relatively straightforward prohibition, and it's the core feature of the act, and it's the first thing regulators will be focused on. Beyond that, I recommend that compliance officers focus on the good faith estimate requirement as it applies to self-pay patients. CMS has not yet implemented that requirement as it applies to all other patients, but it is engaging in administrative enforcement for self-pay patients, so it's important to get that right. And then thirdly, I would focus on squeaky wheels. Most of the enforcement that's occurring is occurring as a result of consumer complaints to administrative and law enforcement agencies. And an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure. If you're a compliance officer and you can bird dog incoming complaints, whether they're made to the practice or the facility or even on Google, you can get out in front of the ball and really save yourself a lot of time and expense down the road.
No, it's funny. We often tend to think of social media as a source of problems. I think it's interesting you're talking about that as a way to identify potential problems as a more positive use. So are there any red flags that they should be particularly alert to? Obviously, you mentioned if you start seeing complaints appearing on Google, Yelp, or whatever. Anything else?
If you have a patient that calls your office and complains about balance billing, that's a red flag that you want to look into right away, because oftentimes balance billing is a systemic problem, and you want to address it as quickly as you can. That's not to say there aren't one-off situations where an insurer conducts claims processing or claims adjudication or other practices that can lead to adjustments in what the plan pays and what the consumer owes. But generally, if you have patients calling in complaining about balance billing, that's something you want to address right away.
And that's good to know. Well, Brian, thank you so much for sharing these insights with us today. And thanks for doing your session, the All Surprises Act, Avoiding Compliance Pitfalls and Responding to Administrative Enforcement Actions Under the Surprise Billing Laws at the 2024 Compliance Institute. I want to thank all of you for taking the time to listen. I'm Adam Turteltaub from SCCE and HCCA. I hope we're able to expand your compliance perspective.